Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is Red Men Radio, number 49.
Bowser.
Yeah, one away from a milestone.
Wow.
That I won't be here for next week. Got it.
That's fine.
Got it. We're putting the video version of this out on YouTube to see how people get on with it. So if you're watching this on YouTube, hello.
Hi.
Welcome. We do this every single week for the last 48 weeks.
That's correct. Well yes. Done, actually. You did really well there, mate.
We're going to have a kickoff question. If you don't know, I'm Paul Machin. That there is Chris Pajak. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. Kickoff question this week comes from, I pluralised that for no reason, Dylan O'Rourke, who asks us for our five-a-side team of the worst Liverpool players ever. When we've done that, we're going to be doing some news and brief, which is very news and brief. It's one story. It's the Jamie Carragher spit stuff. We're going to be talking post-Man United, Defiance, Watford and the international break and taking some audio questions later on. But Chris, you've had a little time to think about this one. We've pre-prepared.
I have.
I've got a few options on this. I enjoyed this as a question.
Okay.
Give me your five-a-side team.
Michael Stensgaard in goal.
Thinking.
He never played for us. He must have been really bad because we've had some terrible keepers that have played for us.
Right, that's okay. Yeah, I like
two
that
years,
logic.
2 years.
But, yeah, he never got a game, so he must be worse.
David James was ahead of him. Grabalow was ahead of him. You know, and it's one of them. Grabalow was a great keeper and stuff. But you know, Michael Stensgaard for me, the story that stuck in my head was he dropped an iron on his foot and injured himself. I Wikipedia'd it, and that's not what happened.
Okay.
He put his shoulder out setting up an ironing board.
Right. Yeah, there's a few of those stories. There was a great Dave Besson story. This is going to age us tremendously, but he used to play for Chelsea and Wimbledon in golf. He played, he saved John Aldridge's penalty in the 88 FA Cup final. He had a salad bowl, and it sounds like a big glass salad bowl, and he opened the cupboard for some salad dressing, and the bottle fell out. And because he had his hands full, he tried to do the next best thing because he couldn't catch
it. Yeah, he'd kick it.
He controlled it with his foot and broke his foot.
Yeah, you do. And listen, the ironing board story kind of reminded me of our mate Wensley and his dad, to be honest with you.
Ironed his penis.
Okay. Just wearing a shirt, ironing his trousers, flopped onto the table.
Yeah. I wonder whether it was it. That's impressive if he's been able to do that. Go on, give us the rest of the team.
Paul Konchesky.
It has to
be him because he embodied Roy Hodgson's Liverpool for me and the signings that were made, and he was absolutely terrible. And then all the stuff that went on with his mum on Facebook and all that type of stuff, nothing to do with how bad a footballer he was. He showed us that on his own two feet, as it were. El Hadji Diouf, although I don't actually think he was probably one of Liverpool's worst players, but I hated him more than most players that have ever played for Liverpool. You know, he come off the back of a barnstorming World Cup with Senegal, didn't he? And he was billed as this player, and we bought him before the World Cup, so all eyes were on him, and the price was cheaper because we got him before the World Cup, and he just stunk the place up. And I think the thing
he scored two on his debut for us, and we were like, yeah, great, give him an answer, it looked amazing, and then was never reached that level again.
And was he the reason that we didn't sign Nico and Elka?
Well, yeah, that was always a speculation. Yeah, we had an Elka on loan, didn't we? We chose not to follow that up, and then instead we bought. I'll add you to you. So yeah, he gets double, triple the blame.
One that a lot of people won't remember. It's tough for us to remember this guy. Istvan Kosma. I think he's pretty universally known as the worst player that's ever played for Liverpool. Brought in as an attacking midfielder under Graham Souness. At the time, we were linked with Eric Cantona as well. and Graham Souness decided to go for Istvan Kosma, whose Liverpool career actually ended, Paul. Yeah, slow clap for Graham, well done you. His career ended because back in the day, he didn't even play enough games for his work permit, Paul, because we just let him rot. Do you know what I mean? And he had 10 games for Liverpool. We won 2, drew 3 and lost 5 in those games that he played. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I read a story on LFChistory.net where they actually praised him for his one good performance in a Liverpool shirt, and we were 3-0 down against a newly third division side in Chesterfield, and he made 2 assists in that game, and they literally said, because he was playing players of a similar talent to him, that's how bad he was. This is a guy that got signed for Liverpool and let go. I mean, he was absolutely terrible. And up top, I'm torn between going for Balotelli and Sean Dundee.
Okay.
Now, Balotelli is not the worst player that's ever played for Liverpool, and he's not probably in the worst 5. But again, it goes back to my sort of hatred. My hatred of him, you know. 4 goals in his 28 appearances, 1 goal in the league, in his league games and stuff. And I've spoken about it many times to you, but that 14-15 season, where he was on the bench and he got a chewy out of his mouth and threw it at the opposing bench and started laughing. And I'm just thinking, you are the most unprofessional footballer ever, and I would not want you in my 5-a-side team or any team that I've ever been a part of.
And then you've gone and picked him.
Well, yeah, pretty much. Like,
but it is, you're not picking in general world terms. You're not picking a worst 5-a-side team, are you?
No, Sean Dundee would be in that.
Yeah. So I've got five
appearances, no goals.
I've got 2 variations on this, I'll be honest. I have a number of the players that you've mentioned in mind. So my actual worst... My worst team is... I've gone for... The goalkeeper one's a tricky one because we've had some dreadful... In fact, every goalkeeper that has played for Liverpool has been largely dreadful, with the exception of Clements, Grobbelaar, Pepe Reina, and the last month of Lawrence Kerrish. So, take your pick. If we're going for one of the worst... You could go for Peggy Arfaxad quite easily in that he was terrible.
He's gone on to have a good career by all accounts.
I've gone for, if I was true to go for it, I picked Adam Bogdan, because Adam Bogdan is poo. He's so poo. And look, I'm sure he's lovely, but he just looks like the forgotten Weasley stepchild.
Yeah, true that.
That just lives in a garage. And they go and practice magic spells that cause physical deformities to people on.
He looks like that. Mm. Wow, okay.
Sorry, Adam. It's a bit harsh. My actual worst one's got Arfaxad in goal, Konchesky, Poulsen, Jean-Michel Ferry.
Yeah, good show.
So Jean-Michel Ferry actually has the reputation as the worst player ever to play for Liverpool. He only ever played one game, and it was that was a post-season friendly game. Was it Sunderland we were playing?
Was he the spy in the camp, Jean-Michel Ferry?
The story goes that Gerard Houllier brought him in at Liverpool to kind of work out who was with him and who was against him in the Liverpool dressing room. DM, largely terrible.
Gerard Houllier just coming off reading the back of The Art of War.
Yeah, exactly. He had Sung Soo tucked up in his back pocket. And Sean Dundee up front, because Sean Dundee, yeah. There was a point where we were like, come on, just give him a game. Give that Dundee a go. It inevitably boiled down to, if he's not getting a go, it's because he's not good enough to get a go. I have done a variation on this,
okay,
though, Chris.
Can we just talk? I just want to mention one thing about Sean Dundee. Yeah. Roy Hodgson, pretty much the nicest man that's ever been involved in Liverpool Football Club, give or take, came out with this quote.
Okay.
One player I do regret signing was Sean Dundee. He was terrible on and off the pitch.
Amazing.
It's just so not Roy Evans. What? And that's what you've driven him to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not Roy Hodgson.
Did I say Roy Hodgson?
I have got a Roy Hodgson theme, so you've segued nicely. I've gone for a Roy Hodgson-inspired 5-a-side team.
Milan.
What?
Is it? What's that guy's name? Ivanovic?
Well, I could put you... basically, I've gone... It's not quite fair on Brad Jones to put him in goal, but he was there, so I'm going to put him in goal. Konchesky, obviously. Poulsen, obviously. Joe Cole was there.
He got sent off in his first game. Well done, Joe.
And a Milan Jovanovic up front. Now, here's the thing. I reckon Joe Cole would be a splendid 5-a-side footballer. Maybe more 7s, because you'd have to do a lot of running around in 5-a-side. But I think that's where he would shine most, is in small sided games where you're not allowed to slide tackle. But he was fucking terrible for us, Joe Cole. He was terrible. I had such high hopes. Nothing typical. If you ever... ever concerned about, like, you think Liverpool are not going anywhere, or you think we're not great, or whatever, we have got a T-shirt on the Red Men TV, so that, you know, it could be worse, and it is Roy Hodgson unveiling. In fact, it was Jovanovic, Cole. We signed Kiriakos, but I don't think he's in that picture, and it was Danny Wilson, I think, was the other one. Bless him, you know, he was a tryer. We used to sign Joe Coles and be like, oh, well, look, maybe we'll get the best out of Joe Cole. No one was going to... You're not getting the best out of Joe Cole.
The best was gone.
Crap. And you consider, like, people critical of us getting Milner on a free. Love James Milner. Right, news in brief, Chris. By all means, if you want to interact, do leave your five-a-side, worst Liverpool five-a-side teams in the comments section. Or tweet us at the Redmen TV. Look, normally on the podcast at this point, we run through a range of topics, but we're limited on time, and there's one big one that's going to have to be discussed. Jamie Carragher.
Yeah.
And what's being dubbed Spitgate, because, you know.
You need to do that.
Yeah. It obviously stems, and I'm absolutely stealing this line from Mitchell and Webb, it obviously stems from Watergate-gate, which is good to know that it's still being kept going. What a dickhead. I mean, literally, there are two massive dickheads in that video, but let's start with Jamie Carragher.
Okay.
I mean, why... There's a guy filming, yeah, I get it, and I will come on to the reasons and the whatever, maybe find some logic behind it, but on the surface, Chris, he's getting stick, and he's right to get stick, because he's opened his window and gobbed on someone on the road. Stupid.
Yeah, it's a really horrible video to watch, actually. Yeah. You know, the first time I saw it, I sort of recoiled, and I was like, that's disgusting, like, yeah. Absolutely disgusting. Yeah, listen, he was a bad dick. You know, he was a bad dick. There was one grown-up in that video, and it was a 14-year-old girl.
Who got spat on. Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah. That's what it's come to. Like, yeah, you know, the two dads in that video are both being just knobheads.
Yeah.
And listen, you know, I don't even think the banter was that, like... It didn't deserve what Carragher did. He snapped. It's obviously an accumulation of stuff, and I wouldn't like to have a guess at what that is all about.
Oh, listen, we've all been in situations in life when it's normally with our respective partners. When you lose it, it's very rarely over the incident that's at hand.
Yeah,
it is. It's a culmination of generally lack of sleep.
I regret a few rock bottoms that I've given out over the years. Do you know what I mean? You've just had it too much, and you know what? She's burnt me toast, and she just takes one through the kitchen table.
Wow. Yeah, I actually think it probably happened more the opposite way than anything else. But yeah, it's
I never burnt toast.
Yeah, but it's look. Again, you're right. Look, it's. We can't know Carragher's mentality, and, you know, and ultimately, if he does anything else, here's the thing, he probably gets a similar reaction if he flips the V's at him or something, you know what I mean? I mean, people don't recoil as much because spitting is disgusting and it's horrible, but what I mean is there's probably still as much of a furore over it because it's Sky Sports presenter Jamie Carragher. If he tells him to fuck off, well, that's him being bad again. On the scale of badness, just because spitting is a horrible, disgusting thing, it's worse. But there's a controversy, we were doing
a live show this morning, the news show, and one of the things that was brought up in that news show is Wayne Rooney. And I don't want to throw around other people, but Wayne Rooney's been caught drink driving. You know, Roberto Firmino. These have all got jobs in the Premier League stuff. So yeah. this stuff, as disgusting as it is, it's not the worst thing in the world. Let's be blunt about it. You know, there's far worse things going on all around the world in every bloody street in England and all that type of stuff. You know, it's ridiculous that we live in an age where this stuff gets blown up to the point where this is now the third video that I'm doing on it.
It's ridiculous. The thing that gets me is that, like, you can tell that it's a spare of the moment red mist thing from Jamie Carragher, because he's not considered the fact that he's driving at like 50 miles an hour and the odds of him genuinely getting that spit in the window of the other guy properly. And that's why, you know, there's a great story, you know this one, where I was driving down the motorway in my youth and I had no water in my windscreen wipers and my screen was getting more and more covered. It was a bit, you know, there's a lot of salt on the road or whatever, and it was getting harder and harder to see. And I was like, oh my God, like, you know, now I'd pull over and sort it out. But when I was 19, yeah, I didn't have that level of intelligence. I did have a bottle of Lucozade Sport, squeezy. So I'm thinking, I'm driving 70, you know, keeping to the speed limit, just to clarify the story. Because, you know, there's a lot
of... Both hands on the steering wheel.
We're going to discuss the legality.
Both hands on the steering wheel, Paul.
Of course, just for that very brief moment when I had to wind my window down and try and squirt Lucozade Sport onto my windscreen to create enough liquid, I ended up with, if we count like 100% of the liquid that left the bottle, approximately 2% of that liquid ended up on the windscreen of my car. It ended up covering 1% of the windscreen, which was in an area of the windscreen that I can't look out of anyway because I had to sit up very high in the corner. And the other 95% or whatever it was of that Lucozade ended up down my arm and on the inside door of my car because, well, you know, physics, right? Yeah, you know, so, you know, we do stupid things, and there's no way, if Carragher could have thrown something, you know what I mean, he's got a better chance of throwing a heavy object out of his car or something. I don't, it's mental, isn't it? That's not a reasoned response, is what I'm driving at. That's a split decision. I'm spitting.
Yeah.
Spitting.
Yeah. Stupid. I can honestly put my hand up and say I've never spat out of my window.
Ah, that is true. Right, let me tell you this story, by the way. Chris Pajak has never spat out of his window, but not for the want of trying. So we're driving down the road, and we're coming up to traffic lights. And on the drive up the road, the window is open. The driver's window is open. Chris just winds his window up. He's done. He's done with the window being open. You get to the traffic lights, turn, and for the sake of the camera, spit his window. Fantastic. Sorry, look, we all do stupid things in the heat of the moment.
Sometimes not in the heat of the moment. But you know, moving the story forward slightly on the Jamie Carragher stuff.
There's no defending. I'm not going to sit here You know, I think we can talk about, and I've done a video over on my YouTube channel about it, a bit more about how much of a bellend the fella is as well. There's no defending either action, really. But again, as far as that reaction from Carragher, it is absolutely indefensible because...
It's indefensible, it's absolutely disgusting, and I think he knows it, and that's the main point of it, isn't it? You know, it's really tough to watch, and one of the reasons that it got to me so much is because I think that Carragher's been doing a really good job of promoting Liverpool and Liverpool people in media.
Yeah.
Because I've felt for years and years that Scousers don't get the rub of the green when it comes to this type of stuff. And anyone with a strong accent, not just Scousers, by the way, I think anyone with a strong accent generally doesn't get on national TV because of that accent. And Carragher was breaking down a few walls there and breaking barriers down for Scouse people and stuff. And then what it comes back to is what everybody thinks that Scousers are like.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's disappointed me more than absolutely anything, because he's an absolute hero of mine, and he's shed Liverpool people in a bad light, and I don't like that.
Yeah, I know, and I totally agree with that, because he does all that. He's gaining so much popularity and so much credit, and it's amazing how many people have talked about, even people, you know, people who don't really care about the ins and outs and aren't shocked or whatever, saying how many people have mentioned what a great pundit he is in this, which is should be irrelevant, I guess. But you're right, and then the Scally comes out, and is the thing though, and the thing about we're remembering about Jamie Carragher is he's come the long way up. Not like the, you know, Ricky Lambert, Jamie Vardy long way up kind of thing, but you know, he's a Scally lad from Bootle. He's worked his bollocks off. He's made the most out of his talent. He's made himself a very good career. And when people got to the end of that, no one would have thought Jamie Carragher would have been one of the top two or three pundits in world football off the back of it, because, as you say, oh, Scouse lad, oh, he's got speaks quite high pitched at times, etc., etc. No, he's adapted that role and he's taken that on. But it is always worth remembering for that. I think there's a lot of people sometimes. I think if you're comfortably middle class, sometimes I think people look at that and go, because it's not a. It doesn't compute with them sometimes. I'm not suggesting that every Scally or everyone from Bootle would naturally react like that, but there is to a degree with where you just, it's something that if he was in a scrap, and if he never became a professional footballer, ended up in a fight in a pub or something and did that, you see that happening in pubs and clubs the length and breadth of the country every single week. But he's a felon, he's dragged himself, and that's the thing that gets forgotten sometimes, is that he's just a fella at the end of the day. We hold him up to this high regard and this high esteem because he's a pundit and he's a millionaire and he should be able to do that. He's still a fella at the end of the day. If you took Jamie Carragher out of football, he'd react in the same way any given. And that, some people could say that's to his credit because it's not changed him. But equally, it just means that he's got that edge to him that I'm sure he's not pleased with that. I'm sure he wouldn't love to have that edge. I'm sure he would like to have that.
Also probably what made him the player that he was.
You know, he was a dickhead when he was 18, Chris. You know what I mean? He nearly got sacked by Liverpool at that age. You know, this is the lad who picked a coin back up at a football match and threw it back into the crowd because he thought that was the... He thought, rather than react to someone throw a coin at me by, you know, like Luis Suarez putting it in your boot or whatever, to try and pick that person out again by throwing it. There's a case to be made that Jamie Carragher is... There's a little bit of an idiot in him. He tries his best to uncover it, but he's human.
There's a little bit of an idiot in everybody, isn't there? And here's the thing, and you know, I said it on the news show today, Paul. I have forgiven Gary Neville almost for being as bad a monk as he was, and I can see that he's a great pundit and probably the best analyst on Sky. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think I'd feel the same if Gary Neville did something like that and was able to apologise because it's the apology that makes it for me, because I sat there and I watched it on my own and I sat down and watched the whole thing, and there was a point where he was talking about his kids and he stopped talking and I could see that it was affecting him. And I put myself in that situation and thinking about how my kids would feel about me and all that type of stuff. And we've all done things that we regret. And it was at that point that I went, the guy's absolutely sincere and everybody deserves a second chance on something. You know, he stepped up, he's gone on live TV, he's talked for 30 minutes fielding the same questions, he's not been uppity about it. It's clearly obvious that he's very, very sorry about it. The book shouldn't be thrown at him. He's held his hand up, he has gone on live TV to sort this stuff, and he's apologised. I think it's contrite and I think it's genuine.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Absolutely. Look, at the end of the day, if Jamie Carragher walks up unprovoked and spits in someone's face, then, you know, absolutely. But I think there's a degree to which we all need to get off our moral high horse and remember that although we don't see, look, we only see the context of what's within the framing of that video. We've no idea what's gone on, as you say, in his day and his life leading up to that point. We all have those moments where we lose our rag. And then after the fact, we look at it and go, why the hell did I do that? What was going on with that? To punish someone when, as you say, when they've made efforts for reparation in that regard, they've tried to apologise. I think his apology's been largely accepted. It looks like the response from the fella and I think his daughter as well have kind of said they don't, you know, they don't want him to lose his job over it, which, you know, maybe should have thought of that before buzzing his head off when he's, you know, laughing when the incident happens, etc., etc. But I don't know. Sky will do what Sky will do, but I hope he's able to put it past them and move on, because it shouldn't be forgotten the good work and the good stuff that Jamie Carragher's done around it. And it's, you know, for an incident like that, it should be, I think it should be, and it will be trivialised in the fullness of time. You know, we'll see it on the Great Big Quiz of the Year or whatever, you know, you know, in December. Hopefully it'll be forgotten about, and hopefully people can move on, because there's far worse people out there doing far worse things and getting far less attention for them.
Yeah, true that.
So Liverpool lost to Man United. It gets better, Chris. But one thing, I don't want to talk about the game. We've got the final word show, so if you want to go and get a detailed analysis on that, then please do go and watch that. You've done a great stuff on the stats and tactics, breaking down the goals.
What was your favourite bit?
The bit where you worked out about whether Dejan Lovren's was tracking that. But yeah, do go on that. That's on the redmentv.com. We do loads more of the podcast stuff and loads more of the in-depth video content. It's not just us messing around, laughing about crap players to play for Liverpool. There is real seasoned analysis on there. I want to talk about the response to it, really, because we had a few days to kind of mull it over. And it, for me, the defiance that Liverpool fans have shown, it stems from the fans who were inside Old Trafford. Now, we weren't there, but what was great was watching the videos coming out after it. Fans are locked in, as happens, but the atmosphere and the mood. And Liverpool will do that. We'll sing when we're locked in, because there's nothing else to do a lot of the times in those situations. But I got a real buzz, a real hit of positivity about that, because I think it's a message. I think how Liverpool fans conducted themselves there was a message just to the remaining stragglers inside Old Trafford, who hadn't obviously shot off down the M1 or M6. But it was a message to say, listen, you know what, we'll lose this game of football, but it doesn't matter, because we believe we're on the right track.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? And we are on the right track, Paul. You know, we've seen for the last 3 months we've been in scintillating form, and, you know, you can lose at Old Trafford. People do lose at Old Trafford. It's a tough place to go to against a very good tactical manager in Jose Mourinho, with world-class players and, well, you know, the talented players that they've got. Doesn't take away from what Liverpool are doing this season. Mm-hmm. You know, we're into the last quarters of the Champions League. Yeah. You know, we're fighting for top four again. We're fighting for second place in the Premier League again, and we're improving again. You know, and we've done that since Jurgen Klopp's come into this club. And, you know, I can feel that there's something very, very special brewing at Anfield and brewing in Liverpool. And this squad is going to take a leap, and a giant leap again. You know, I think we've been good this season, but the understanding going into next season means that we're going to be in a greater, you know, there's a much better foundation.
Yeah.
To be able to go and actually challenge for stuff. And listen, one defeat isn't going to end that. Did Manchester City crumble when Liverpool beat them? No, they didn't. They just carried on, because that's what good teams and great teams do, because you'd accept that it's a game of football. Anything can happen in 90 minutes, and you just got to go and prove that you're better over a 38-game league season.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree with that. I've been thinking about it and thinking about Klopp's tenure, actually, and how I remember saying, I don't know if it was the end of his first season, it was probably more like the back end of his second, really, that I felt that you could, if you imagine, like, stick with me on this one, but if you imagine every game is like a board of buttons, and when you press that button, they light up, and those are the ones that stand out for that. So it's a 38 buttons on there. In the first season, or the first games under Klopp, obviously we didn't have the full 38, but you could go through and you can touchstone like the Man City away performance, and you can do a couple of,
Tottenham won the first game, you know, you could see instantly what was happening.
Exactly. And you can pick like Dortmund away, and you can pick Villarreal at home, and those kind of things. And you can see that you looked at those games, when you reviewed the season, you went, they were our best performances. They were what a Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool team is going to look like. So then we come into the next season, and I think we effectively doubled that, and we played, you know, you light up a few more, and you've got some really great victories within that, and you get to it and you go, well, okay, it was great, but it kind of fell down a little bit here and there. And I just think this season, when we put this season next to the others, there's just going to be, in very simple terms, there's going to be a shit ton more lights lit up on the board of this season that show absolutely unequivocally the progression with which this side is making. We people fear that it's going bad, and I think the hysteria around poor results this season has been totally out of proportion to the problems at which Liverpool have actually had in reality on the pitch. And you're dead right in terms of that foundation. I think it's blindingly obvious how good Liverpool have become. It's just, inevitably one of those things that we're not quite there yet. I'm not sure if we'll ever be there. I'm not sure that any team truly gets there. I'm not sure that you ever have 11 perfect players on the pitch at any given time, etc., etc. But you're right, this is not hope. I think there's far more reason to be expecting of Liverpool to be good more regularly than there's been for 5 years.
Of course there is. Blimey, we've got better players and we're playing better football than almost at any other time in the last 5 years. You know, 13-14 was great. This Liverpool side is on its way there now, yeah. You know what I mean? And the problem is we're fighting against the Manchester City side that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But the start of next season is going to be massively important. One of the things, I was doing something with Sporf last week, and one of the analogies that I used was, and we were talking about Mourinho, and I said this, like Mourinho's walked into a game of Monopoly, right, and he's been given Park Lane and Mayfair, yeah. And he thinks it's a good idea to throw hotels on them.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I could throw a hotel on Park Lane and Mayfair and get results, yeah. You know what I mean? That's going to happen. Jürgen Klopp had the Orange, he had Van, and he had Bow, and he had yeah. Marlborough, and we're slowly starting to build up our houses, and we're at the point where we're putting our first hotel on there with mm-hmm. Virgil van Dijk and stuff, and now we've got a Green on the board as well.
Yeah.
That's what Liverpool are doing. You know, we've got to fight against these established sides. They've been here for much longer than us now yeah. at this point. It takes time to get there, and it's not all going to be easy. You know, you don't win with oranges and blues on Monopoly every single game.
Yeah.
You're more likely to win with the greens and the purples or whatever.
Yeah.
But you do win, and you will get there eventually if yeah. you keep on building, right? And that's what Jürgen Klopp's doing at Liverpool. Yeah. You can see that every single time.
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think the comparisons, this team is so similar, and we've talked about this so many times. The stats are there. To 2008-2009 and 13-14, both are our two best seasons in the Premier League era, and both times when we fell short, but crucially, both times where the team fell off a cliff the following season. Now, don't get me wrong, rewind to the end of 13-14, I thought we were going to be back. I was saying we're going to win the title next season because if we keep what we've got and blah, blah, blah. And similarly, 08-09, you know, we felt we were pressing on. And so maybe this is just pure naivety again from me, but again, who cares? I don't believe it to be true. I have never been more confident that this is a Liverpool side that is going to progress and is going to consistently remain at the top end of the league. Because I do, I think we've got there. I think we've put those great foundations that you set in place, and that'll be the difference. Is that if we'd been able to be strong, if we'd had a clear vision. In both of those times, Liverpool were in massive upheaval in 08-09. It broke down because of the ownership off the back of that. That was absolutely breaking. But we fucked the summer up because we had the whole, you know, Xabi Alonso, Gareth Barry,
yeah.
Robbie Keane, you know, debacle. And similarly in 13-14, we let Luis Suarez go and didn't have any effective plan for replacing him. Could happen again this summer, but, you know, if it doesn't, then I think Liverpool are, as you say, I think we are the most likely as any, I should say, to put a title challenge in.
Absolutely agree with that, mate, 100%.
But yeah, obviously that's next season. With regard to this season, we'll talk a little bit about Watford coming up and how we're going to handle the international break after that. But before I do, hello, Tom and Si and Ross have done a fantastic job this week. We've got a new podcast that's been going for a few weeks now. Comes out after every single game. It's the Man of the Match podcast, where they sit down and debate the best and sometimes most unfortunate performers of the week in any given game. Normally a very, very easy job. Bit of a slog for them this week, so they've done an absolutely sterling piece of work. Have a quick listen and see how you get on with this.
Time starts now.
Yeah, so it's a tough one this week, isn't it? I'm going to qualify it by saying I don't think anyone played very well. I don't think Sadio Mane himself played very well, but I thought he was the best of the bad bunch in a game when we needed people to drive at them because they were sitting so deep. We needed people to pick up the ball, drive at them, run at them, try and make them to make mistakes. He was the only one. I thought he was the only one in the team who'd done that. Maybe Robertson done it a little bit on the left from left back, but he was coming deep and picking it up in midfield. He was winning fouls. His passes weren't coming off. When we needed that through pass, his passing was poor. That's obvious, that's plain for anyone to see in that game, but at least he was trying them things, and I thought if anyone was going to make something happen, then it was him, and he did that. He got the assist for the own goal. You get a little bit of luck, but it shows what can happen when you drive at them and you just put balls in areas and see what happens. It felt like if we were getting a second goal, it would have come through him. He had 5 out of 6 dribbles complete, which is the most on the pitch. Surprisingly enough, he actually completed 79% of his passes, which is the most out of any of the front three, which I was surprised when I seen that stat.
Yeah, if you want to get involved with more Redmen TV podcast, Redmen Radio podcast, go to theredmentv.com, sign up. It's completely free for the first month. Try it out, see how you get on with it. If you bang into your podcast and you want them on your phone, you want them in your app, you can get them as well. There's a feed set up, isn't there, Chris? So yeah, all the subscriber podcasts can go into Stitcher or
Podbean,
what have you.
Pod Addict, iTunes, you name it, you can get there.
Amazing. Watford then, Lumen. This is, we've said this a couple of times this season, it doesn't stop being true, but, you know, we can see now that this season's not likely to be defined by how we perform in the big games the way that last season was. You know, I think it's fair to say that we got into top four because we had the best record against those big teams. That was the hardest way around to achieve the expectations of last year. What we are doing is making much lighter work of the teams that you are, in inverted commas, meant to beat. Mm. Watford are one of those teams. And so that's what's going to have to happen now, Chris. You know, we are in the final furlong. We can see the finishing post. Liverpool have just got to get back into the swing of doing what we've done consistently well this season.
Yeah, listen, you know, we've had a tough result last time out and a tough place to go to. We'll be looking at this game and going, let's get a little bit of retribution before we all head our different ways for international break. And Watford coming off the back of a terrible loss against Arsenal. Now, if Arsenal can beat them, we can. You know, it's as simple as that. And, you know, it was comfortable for Arsenal in the end, the 3-0 win, wasn't it? And this Liverpool side, I don't think stuff affects them like it probably affects us fans, yeah. You know, as or even as it's affected teams in the past. You know, every single time we've had a tough result, we've bounced back, and the only one being probably the West Brom and the Swansea result, I think, were back to back. But other than that, you know, after that Tottenham result, my word, we were scintillating for 20 games or something like that. And that's the Liverpool side, and it's not the ones that struggled in the cup, and it's not the ones that struggled at Swansea. This Liverpool side will bounce back. This front three will bounce back, and Watford are going to be on the receiving end, I think, this weekend.
Yeah, and I think there's a degree to which I always say that the first game of a season often it defines how your season goes, which is mental when you think about it. And there's loads of examples of it not being the case, but I can think of a number of Liverpool seasons where if you get off to a win. And sometimes the optimism that flows with that helps. You know, I go back to, and for the best, it was mentioned earlier, you know, we drew with Arsenal first game of Roy Hodgson's career because Liverpool just, you know, Joe Cole lost the head, Pepe Reina lost the head. That game could have gone very, very differently, and that we could have had a very, very different Liverpool off the back of it. But sometimes you get that. And that the Watford game, we saw so many good things in how we performed there, but we saw so many things that became the story of the narrative around Liverpool's season, you know, conceding goals, throwing leads away, etc., etc. I hope it's another great story there, but I hope these players go out there and, you know, having Van Dijk available to us now will make a big difference to this. Having Karius in goal will make a big difference to this as well. And hopefully not having Gini Wijnaldum defending the near post.
Yeah, that Gini Wijnaldum one was nuts, because I remember looking into it at the time, and it's the first time he's defended the front post at a corner for us, because last season when James Milner was playing left back, and James Milner didn't play in this first game of the season against Watford, he was the guy defending that. So we'd gone into this with a new sort of, the zonal thing was exactly the same, but we had a new guy defending that front post area, and he clearly wasn't very good at it. Yeah. You know, hadn't had any practice at it. You know, we've got a settled team now. We've been defending corners really quite well. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been winning more of the second balls as well. So this Watford side will be looking at Liverpool and thinking, we can get at them there again.
Yeah.
And this Liverpool side, it's now time for them to go, no, you can't. Yeah. No, you can't, lads, and we're going to hit you on the counter-attack even if you try it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important, just in very simple terms, we've had too many times. I don't think mentally I'd like to be able to enjoy the international break to the best of our ability. Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, but it's what I mean. I think this is a nice little staging ground for the last little run of the season, isn't it? Pardon me. You want to go in with 3 points tucked up, be asked about what everyone else does, because look, one of, you know, Spurs, Chelsea, United are going to drop points again between now and the end of the season. It's going to happen. Hopefully, we don't need to beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge along that way, but you know what? If we have to, let's go and do that. But it would be nice just for the fan base just to be able to take a big deep breath as well, be able to get through this 3 points, look at the table and go, okay, you know, we are where we are. We can analyse what the remaining results are. We can go and enjoy that Liverpool-Munich Legends game as a fun thing that it is. rather than having to use it as a distraction from the horror of supporting the Reds. And obviously also prove, you know, to Chelsea as well. I think it's important for us to, for Chelsea to be looking at the league table going, this is not going to happen. This is not going to happen. And so yeah, because there's a very good chance as well they're going to have more time to focus on that.
Can I just say though, in a weird way, I kind of don't want that for the development of this team. You know, I want it because it'll be much more comfortable for me, and I'll be able to deal with the run into the end of the season. But what going after two things at the end of the season can do for this side and them succeeding could be better than, you know, having an easy run in, for example. So yeah, if you treat second place as where the, I hate to say, but that's the win this season. If you can get to second place and you can go deep in the Champions League at the same time, I think that's better than getting knocked out of one and just doing really well in the other.
You know what I mean?
You've got to be able to prove, because if you want to win trophies, that's what you've got to do. If you want to win the Premier League and you want to win a cup, then you have to go deep in competitions at the same time. You have to get used to it. So for me, I want it to be a bit, not too much of a hard slog, but just enough that keeps them focused.
You know what I'd like? I mean, again, maybe you're right, and maybe that.
Be hard not, a fan.
Well,
like
not
that,
having maybe not you know maybe not having a net is the answer to maintaining motivation or whatever. But I would like, because we've seen that our away record against good teams this season is absolutely horrendous, I would like to rock up to Stamford Bridge with the cushion of knowing that I'd like it to be a dead rubber by that to the best ability. I want them to be pressing on. So maybe it gives us that if we were to lose it, which is entirely possible because they are a good side. And again, that we have that poor record so far this season. Maybe that gives us the impetus for the last few games just to G up if they get a bit close to us. But it would be nice just to build that or maintain that cushion to the best of our ability. But you might, you know, maybe these lads do need that, maybe they just need that, and maybe we do work better. And I think there's enough evidence to suggest that when the pressure is on, when they're tired, you know what I mean, when they're forced to force themselves through with aching muscles and that kind of stuff, that they do actually perform better than when they've been given a little bit of time off. So no, you maybe you're dead right on that one. Got some questions then. Alex Yetainen. Sorry, Alex. Strengthening the front three in the summer. Yes. No. How to? Lamar Pulisic?
Yes. Don't know. Maybe. Probably defo.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think we'd kind of like what we've seen. We're not in transition anymore. I think we've got a squad. We've got the core of what we're looking to do. But you should always be looking to upgrade on what you do. And whilst I think the defence needs another first teamer. I think we need another top quality first team centre half. I don't think we need another. Provided we keep hold of Mane, Firmino, Salah, which again right now I would expect us to. I don't think we need a first teamer for that, because I think the front three is the front three. I think you would struggle to improve upon that. But I do think we need another quality person who can bang on the door, who can improve. I'm saying, if that's Pulisic, great. Go and do what it takes to get Pulisic. I'm not sure it's Lamar. But whoever that is, go out and buy that. Spend whatever it takes to get them and get that sorted, because we have so far, touch wood, we've been okay. Mm. We've managed the squad reasonably well in terms of keeping people on the pitch. I don't think that's not sustainable. But equally, I think you want competition. I think you want, you want a wonder kid there. I want a wonder kid there who's going, all right, Mo Salah, how is it you do that? And then does it, and then all of a sudden Mo Salah's going, okay. Right, okay, well, I'm not going to be slacking off because I don't want some punk 19-year-old kid taking me place in the side, and similarly for a few of them. So, yeah, I think strengthening the front three in the summer is vital.
I think the hardest thing that Jurgen Klopp's going to do in his Liverpool managerial career might be defined by this is to find the next Firmino. Because I pondered something the other day whereby I've seen Liverpool sides and I've seen the media throw this line at them. They're a one-man team. Mm-hmm. I've seen it for years. I've seen it when Gerrard was there. I've seen it when Owen was there. I've seen it when Suarez was there. And I think we might be more of a one-man team now,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because it's clearly not a one-man team.
They're not talking about Firmino when they say that, though. They're talking about Salah, aren't they? But it is Firmino.
It's Firmino, yeah. And I just, my fear is that if he's taken out for any stretch of time, touch wood, that could be Jurgen Klopp's biggest decision to make, yeah. Because you've got to get someone in there who can do a job and do the same job as Roberto Firmino, because you don't really want to have to bring a striker in and change the way that you're playing. Uh-huh. But also, they need to be really good and yeah. they need to understand what Firmino's doing. And I just look around world football and think, there's no one. Yeah. There's no one like that right now.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that Jurgen Klopp can't make another Roberto Firmino, because I'll be honest with you, he made Roberto Firmino.
Yeah, yeah.
Roberto Firmino had all the skill sets and the tools to do it, but
none
he wasn't.
Of us would have put him there.
No, like, no one would have. Yeah. You know, Jurgen Klopp's got to be given credit. Can he do it again? Can he replicate that?
Yeah.
Could be the biggest thing of his Liverpool career.
The good thing is that you've got Firmino there for the template.
Oh, goodness.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I used to talk about this, about how why Man United signed Michael Owen. It was because they had
Hernandez,
who was of a similar ilk, and it was like, great, go and get a season.
He's like, you had the ball at the back post, mate.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, go and learn from that. You've got an ad, you can do a copy of you over the characteristics over, so to speak. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if we don't know who it is. It's because they're going under the radar. Maybe we do pull a gem out of somewhere. Whatever the solution is, I think you're right. I think that's something. It was something that Sachin Nakrani wrote in his article on our website the other week. Was that, you know, it's vital that we do start to look into that kind of thing. You're dead right. For me, I think we've got options. I think two would be nice. Or you get someone who, so if you have to put Salah in that position, or you have to put Mane in that position, then you still got someone with a ridiculous pace, so you're not putting Lallana out yeah. wide again or whatever. Okay, Mark Holloway, what was your favourite film growing up and your favourite film of the last 5 years?
I think I mentioned this on last week's podcast or the week before, but it's Goodfellas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Growing up,
it's always been a toss-up between Back to the Future and Shawshank Redemption.
I mean, yeah, Shawshank Redemption is a great film.
Unbelievable. They're both films that I can't watch often, but every few years I can go back to and still feel a sense of... They're getting an emotional response out of me whenever I watch them. Like Back to the Future was on, it was going back like 6 or 7 years now probably, but it was on the cinema. They got a re-release for like one night only, and that was the only one I'd not seen on the pictures at the time. Going to see that was like a proper giddy schoolboy moment for me.
One of the films that, you know, is right up there with my favourites, doesn't get a mention here, but it will do now, is, and for similar reasons, is Braveheart. I can't tell you the amount of walls I've run through when that speech happens, Paul. I've just, you know, it's why I keep moving house. Right, I'm off. See you later.
When the renovation works happens, just put it on repeat. Like, yeah, absolutely. Go on, what's your favourite film of the last 5 years?
It's between Wolf of Wall Street, The Big Short, and a surprise entry, Rogue Squadron.
Interesting.
Rogue One, sorry.
Rogue Squadron. It's a surprise entry because it's not a film. Rogue One. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed Rogue One. That was great. I only watch sci-fi and superhero films at this point because I have limited time available to me in there, what I like. So I would have to go Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah,
that was a great film.
Yeah, because for me, and I was actually going to pick like Scott Pilgrim, but it turns out that's like 8 years old now, which is scandalous. I like a movie that it's also got a soundtrack around it as well. So War Hard, the Dewey Cox story, is one of my favourite films in terms of with comedy, but it's got that Blues Brothers as well. So having that, I like the fact that you can take that away with you in Guardians. That first Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack is amazing. Yeah, second one's pretty good, and the second film's really good as well. Like, but yeah, not as good as the first. I was shocked to see that it's 9 years since the Star Trek reboot, because I wouldn't have minded having that in, to be honest. Okay, Aidan Brannick, ideal Champions League draw based solely on what away day you'd want to experience.
Juve.
You want to go to Turin?
Yeah, I want to go to that ground. Okay. You know, I've loved Juventus for years and years and years. Like, so it was a toss up between Juve and Barca, and I like Juve and I don't like Barca.
Yeah, it's tough. Barca was my pick, would have been my pick if I'd not been there on holiday recently, just to go there, because I've not been since I was a little kid. So it wouldn't be like a, you know, oh wow, I'm here. I did the New Camp tour again. That video's on my channel. I was a bit critical of how dirty it was and how much of a lack of a roof it's got in certain places. It's past that. I get Munich, another one, but I did Munich in the summer. But they're the two. I wouldn't mind going to do Munich again as a proper away day. So yeah, I'd pick that. And just lastly, Milesy 20 at Clopsy 20 says, "What are your final thoughts on how the Ball Street relaunch turned out and how much work went into it all?" He said, "In my opinion, you definitely did a great job." Thanks very much, Milesy. Buzzing with it. So if you're into footy chat, we've been doing Social Club on there for a few years now. We've been producing it and presenting it and what have you. Decided to just revamp it and change it, make it a bit sharper, a bit nicer, a bit more polished and professional. And yeah, worked our bollocks off to get it there, but it's out there. If you've not seen it, go over to the Ball Street YouTube channel, youtube.com/Ball Street. Watch the show. Did some more stuff on the Jamie Carragher spitting stuff, some of the stuff that's going on at West Ham, which is terrible at the moment. Really, really good. I'm really pleased with it. So if you liked it, let us know in the comments below. But thanks very much for the comments. Yeah, I'm pleased, buzzing. But this is Redmen, Chris. This is Redmen Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. To join, it really has.
Yeah, good.
Well, thanks for joining us on YouTube thanks as well for the first time.
On YouTube, yeah, if you get on with it and you like it, do drop a like on the video if you want to see more Redmen podcasts on YouTube. If you want more podcasts, say go to theredmentv.com, sign up. We do loads, we look like 20 odd a month. Doing some great stuff covering Liverpool from every single angle. So if you need more Liverpool content in your life, go to the Redmen TV.
And this is the free one as well. So if you're not interested in all the other amazing podcasts that we do, and you just want the free one, there's a free one and there's a build-up show every single week as well.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for watching. Thanks very much for listening. Walk on.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.